which is also why they don't really share our fear of Russia, because they have nothing to fear. If Russia is one of five major suppliers for you and all of them are below 20%, why should you care? If Vladimir Vladimirovich stops delivering gas, you get it from elsewhere. But if you buy 100% of your gas from Russia, it's a different story.
Let's bring in Roman Kupchinsky to our discussion. Roman, please, your comments and your questions.
Thank you, Irina. In a time of very rapidly changing loyalties, I'm glad that I'm back at my old alma mater, RFERL, for a few hours before I run back to somewhere else. Last week, I began working on thinking about this meeting today. And 2 days ago, I had to change everything because of the agreement that was signed in Brussels on March 23rd between the European Union and Ukraine. The immediate reaction, the violent reaction of Vladimir Vladimirovich Putin, the Russian delegation walking out of the conference hall that same day before the conference was ended, the comments by Putin that we will review our relations with the EU and possibly change contracts, raise the price of gas, or change the price of gas arbitrarily, unilaterally, for me were very shocking and not really understandable immediately. Why? What happened? Well, what happened was, I think the major point of it is, that the whole structure of gas delivery, of gas transit from Russia to the EU can change, which will have dramatic consequences for the whole energy structure and the whole concept of the Russian Federation and of Gazprom towards where it is going. The EU-Ukrainian agreement stated that the EU would buy its gas at the Russian-Ukrainian border, and that the EU would pay transit costs to Ukraine. Up to now, the whole transit facility was from Russia to the German border, to the Slovak border, to the countries that had signed the contracts. What in fact happens now, if the EU goes along with this and doesn't renege in the near future, is that the Ukrainian gas transport system will be integrated into the European gas transit system. Now, this is a colossal meaning in terms of the whole complex of issues dealing with transit. Don't forget that the largest transit of gas to the EU comes through Ukraine. A second point in the EU-Ukraine agreement was to possibly expand the Ukrainian main trunk pipeline to have an extra 60 billion, almost 60 billion cubic meters more of put through capacity. Putin, he reacted by saying, well, how do you know we'll give you that gas? How do you know if we're able to fill that? What Putin was really saying was that if this happens, Nord Stream and South Stream will not be needed. And this is something that Putin and Gazprom have put their major bets on over the last few years. This is one of the major reasons for the January 2008 boycott of Europe, not because Ukraine owed Russia money for gas. Yeah, that's not true. Ukraine paid by 31 December 2008, it paid off all its debts. And nonetheless, they were blockaded. So, you know, the Russian arguments fall to the wayside. But this, if Nord Stream and South Stream are not viable. Commercially, they're not viable. It would cost $10 billion to renovate the Ukrainian pipeline, expand its throughput capacity by $60 billion, and Nord Stream and South Stream become commercially unfeasible. This would open the way for Nabucco to gain more supporters from those European countries that initially, thus far, have gone along with the South Stream project. This is, I think, the essence of what is the reaction we're seeing today in Moscow. And just to quote Walter Boltz, the vice chairman of the European Regulators Group for Electricity and Gas, In an interview with the Kommersant Daily today, he stated, in reality, there are no reasons why Russia should ensure transit of gas and why we shouldn't pay for transit. We buy gas at the Ukrainian-Russian border and worry about its delivery ourselves. I believe there is no alternative. And that's very important. My question is, will the EU stick to this? Will Putin abandon the present gas pricing policy of linking it to gas to oil products and choose an arbitrary price that he would pull out of the air, like he pulled out of the air the $250 per 1,000 cubic meters for Ukraine? It was a totally arbitrary figure. There was no commercial reason for this. It was totally arbitrary. So I believe this is one of the biggest questions that I have to you. Will the EU stick to this, or will it slowly be torn apart, Germany going its own direction, the French in another? The only European company which has come out against the EU-Ukraine agreement is Italy so far, for many other reasons.
Well, that's a good question. Thank you very much for this. I think I know something about the situation. Somewhere in the beginnings of all this is a non-paper which I wrote actually in December 2006 about just when I get my position, and I said that the situation, the state of the transit pipelines is such that we have to worry. Because I compared how much money we invested in the renewal of our pipelines for oil, for gas, and with the fact that nothing was done east of our border. And from that actually started some sort of study of the state of the pipeline network of Russia. I had a beautiful spat in that time with Alexander Medvedev, the deputy head of Gazprom, who basically claimed that pipelines are in perfect order in Russia and nothing is going to, there's no needed for any investment. And last year when we met again, we meet regularly, he was praising the company for spending half of its investment budget on renewal of the pipelines. So I thanked him very much for investing money in something that's not needed. And, actually, Russians started to renew the pipelines. In Ukraine, the situation is much more complicated for one reason. Naftogaz is, and I say this with all respect to people who actually work there, and I have quite a few friends there, Naftogaz is a totally unknown to the outside world black box company, which has everything in it. And since 2007, EU keeps saying, if you want to renew and repair the gas transit pipelines, you have to take out the Ukrtransgaz, the company which runs the pipelines, and take it out of Naftogaz. Because then you can actually have some sort of control of the investments. You can have a look at the money being spent and how is it being spent. And trust me, this is not a proposal which is being loved by many in Ukraine. I hope I will not insult anyone's feelings, but Naftogaz is milked by many in Ukraine. And the fact that it's basically bankrupt and has been bankrupt for quite some time is, for me, it's a major wonder. You know, how can you actually be bankrupt when you run 80% of Russian gas exports to Europe and the oil transits to Hungary, Czech Republic, and Slovakia? I mean, how can you make such a wonder of losing billions of dollars, and you should be the most profitable company in Ukraine? And the reason is very simple. There are plenty of people who make huge amounts of money out of Naftogaz, and those are mostly in Ukraine themselves. And, you know, the transparency issue, as it's being usually called, I put it in very much more bluntly terms. I keep telling my Ukrainian friends that they steal too much too fast, and they are stealing their country away. With this tempo, Ukraine will lose Crimea and maybe its own independence. And I think that's really what's at play at the moment, what's at stake. Because you see a much stronger Russia, much more determined Russia, which really wants something and knows what it wants. And you have Ukraine on the other side, which is not consistent, which has a president fighting the prime minister. I mean, you know it better than I do, I guess, by your name. And that's just frustrating, all our efforts. So the fact that Ukraine agreed to something that Russia agreed to before, which is taking the Ukrtrans gas out of Naftogaz is a great step. We want to see it fulfilled, because only then money can actually come to Ukraine for investment. We've heard on Monday a very clear statement from the president of the European Investment Bank, Mr. Maystadt, as well as the vice president of EBRD, Mr. Freeman, that without transparency and basic accounting rules, no one is going to pour billions of euros into Ukraine, because those money would just vanish. And we will see. Europe is prepared, and I clearly, you know, even though the government in Czech Republic fell last night, you know, we will still be running the show till late June. And I can promise you that we will stick to what we're doing, and we have no change of policy, no change of tack. It will depend very much on what the Ukrainians will want to do. And I was very pleased that we saw both Mrs. Tymoshenko and Mr. Yushchenko in the same place in the same time, without actually arguing with each other loudly, and it was a very nice sight. I would love to see it more often, and not just in Brussels, and for 10 or 15 minutes. And I do sincerely hope that Ukrainians themselves and Ukrainian elite will understand what is at stake. It's the survival of their country. The reaction from Moscow is so strong because this is precisely what is at stake. And I couldn't put it more bluntly. And I know that I should be diplomat because my position is such, but I came from security field and I'm used to speak relatively bluntly. I think this is what is at stake, and that's why we are trying so much to keep Ukraine on track. But they have to want it themselves.
Let's take several questions here, and please introduce yourself.
Irina, may I ask first? Yeah. I'm sorry you haven't answered You have not. My name is Nenad Vejic, I'm associate director. You have not answered to the question put by Roman. Roman asked you, will Europe stick to it? You said Czech Republic will stick to it.
Speak for Europe now.
we do speak for Europe at the moment, at least till June 30th. And I think after us comes Sweden, which has the same commitment to Ukraine's independence. And as for Europe, I think Europeans are prepared to help out those who want to help themselves. And many of us in Europe had been frustrated in the last few years by what happened in Ukraine after the Orange Revolution. If we see a profound, real interest, we will help. If we don't, we will just move on elsewhere.
Okay, we have a question here, Sergey, please.
Sergey Sinitsyn from Russian Service Communications. Mr. Ambassador, let me please return the key once again to the Russian gas delivery through Ukraine to the EU. Any additional gas being extracted should be delivered somewhere, either to consumer or to some underground reserve, gas holder. 3 years ago, when we were speaking about the first Ukrainian-Russian gas war, so-called, it lasted only 3 or 4 days.
4 days.
4 days. One of the main reasons was the Russia filled all practically affordable gas reserve, gas holders underground within 3 or 4 days. And that was one of the main reasons why Gazprom just has to resume delivery. From this point of view, what do you think about the main reason why the latest conflict, I mean this year, could last for 3 weeks?
Well, both were ready to go on for a long time. Ukrainians were ready to go to the summer. They had storages full, they cut off the country completely. As for Russians, they could go on for a long time as well, because in the end you can do the third thing with the gas, which is just burn it. You can flare it, which is being done on a tremendous scale in Russia. I mean, the amount of gas burned, or flared as it's being called in Russia, is probably about one third of the whole volume of gas which is being delivered to Europe. annually. I mean, talking about normal year. Flaring is still, I was in Khanty-Mansiysk in October last year. I've been to many places before. And landing at night in those places is really, Las Vegas by multiplied by 10. It's really a flash show. So there is no problem with this. You can just flare, you can just burn the gas. You can do that. That's quite feasible. And I think what was really at stake this January was that Russia was really economically hurt by the lost revenues. And the possibility of this standoff lasting to the summer, because Ukraine's storages were full, they could keep the country going until June, July. They will basically take away a huge slice of Russia's foreign currency revenues. And in the time of crisis, that will be a major blow. So what we feared actually was the possibility that if the conflict would last 2-3 months, you could see a very violent reaction, because it would be a major, major blow to Russia's economy. So the gas issue as such wasn't really, in my opinion, the major problem. The major problem was, what would Russia do if it had basically no or very little income from the gas for 3 months?